I learned it by watching you.
Damn it. Utter fail. Welcome to episode 11.
11.
Of the STR Gamer podcast. My name is Brian.
I'm Sam.
And we're here to fill your ear holes with... not much, really. The actual educational value of this podcast can be rated in milligrams.
Negative milligrams.
Yes. Yeah, we're sucking grams out of your ear holes. There we go.
That is disgusting.
I know. All right, so this week we're going to talk about not much and then talk some more about not much, with maybe some much in there. I will start with what I've been playing, because really I haven't been playing much of anything at all.
Anything?
Really much of anything. I've been playing Tiny Tower on my iPad, because it's a game that plays itself, which works really well for me right now. Literally, you pop in every once in a while and push a button, and then you turn the app off, and it continues to play in the background.
What is it?
It's a tower simulator where you are creating a tower of people, you know, like buildings, and you can put, every time you build a floor, you can put either a business of some type or residential on there.
Is it like a Maxis game? Like
It's very much like that, except much more abstract. Mm-hmm. And bitizens move into your residential areas, and they have places they'd like to work and ratings in terms of how well they work in the various types of businesses. And then you put them in the businesses, because unlike most places, these people all live and work in the exact same place.
Wow.
Anyway, and then each of the businesses has three different products that they sell, which sell for different amounts, but they take a longer amount of time to restock. And it's, Will Smith from Tested described it as basically a gigantic Skinner box, and that's pretty much what it is.
Interesting.
And there's a whole gigantic microtransaction behind this. I mean, the game itself is free, but you can buy extra tower bucks to speed up the restocking and other things like that.
Okay.
So that's a gigantic issue. But you can also just go away and leave it alone for a couple days, and it will create money that you can then use to build things.
Interesting.
And stuff. So, yeah, like I said, you can literally play it for 30 seconds and go away, and something happens while you're away. Which
sounds kind of like a Facebook game.
It is somewhat like a Facebook game. Yeah, I'm trying to think if the developers have done any Facebook games. I think they have.
Do you know who makes it?
Rocket Games, Rubber Games.
Slippy, Slappy.
Frogger
Games. Samsonite.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember. Anyway, they have a loyal following, and this game has been blowing up the last week.
Oh, okay.
So, anyway, I've been playing that. Really not much else. I've been pretty busy this week with work and other extracurricular things. I went and saw Transformers Sunday night, and that was terrible. And then I went and saw Harry Potter, Deathly Hallows Part 2, which was pretty good. But that was a midnight show. And
oh, man.
So that really sucked. I've really eaten up a lot of my quote-unquote game time this week, so... tomorrow will be my first day off since whenever, last week sometime, and I'm looking forward to maybe playing some games. I might just futz with Google Plus, though. Who knows? We'll see.
That's a good thing to do.
Yeah. I hope to God you've been playing a bunch of shit, because...
Actually, I have.
Oh, thank God.
Quite a variety of things, actually. Been playing a bunch of PSP games. I think I was playing... I was playing something, and it really made me want to play a PSP game, and I can't remember what it was. But I started playing Little Big Planet PSP, which I played a bit of. Which is funny, because like the first level in that game, or like the second level or something, has some of the best theme music that I've heard in a game. It's very like feel good poppy like. Yeah. Music. So I've played that game, that level, like over and over, just because the music is good. And I haven't really played much past that. Plus, I had like a little bit of a Little Big Planet ennui after playing the first game.
I was going to ask if you had played Little Big Planet at all.
Yeah, I played through the everything that that came with the game that the developers put in there, and some of the community content or whatever, but. Never really got into... after I played through the story mode, like, I didn't really feel compelled to go back and max out my Sackboy with all of the different accoutrements.
Maxing out your Sackboy. That's awesome.
Yep. So I didn't really feel compelled to go back and, you know, do other things or do much co-op or whatever. Although I will say I did a couple of co-op games, like, just online on the PSN. And there's really nothing funnier than seeing, you know, a bunch of different SAC people just, like, everyone doing, like, everyone completely dressed in insane ways that you didn't even know there was DLC for. Like, one person dressed as Solid Snake, the other person dressed as a pirate, the other one dressed all in pink, and, you know, another person.
That was you, wasn't it?
Yeah. And another person, like, who's just in the regular Sackboy avatar. Yeah. And, like, everyone's, like, you know, doing different things with their arms or, like, has different expressions. And one person's, like, holding on to dear life, like, onto some skateboard that's going one direction. Like, it's pretty funny. Just a very feel-good game, you know. After I played that, you know, just, you know, the second one actually came out right after I beat the first one, and I wasn't really interested in it. And so started playing that again, and like it as much as I like the PS3 game, so, which is pretty cool. Also been playing this game called Loco Roco.
Oh, yeah.
Which, it's also a very happy feel-good game. It's not
a rhythm game, right?
It's not really, no. Yeah. I mean, it's got music elements to it, but, well, and it's got good music, I should say. But the mechanics really don't have anything to do with the music.
Huh.
It's okay. I mean, like, it's very happy and feel-good, and I think that, and the art is very good, and I think that's what, you know, gives it its oomph. But as a game, like, it's not very, it doesn't really catch one's interest as much as I think it could. I hear the second one is good, though. And also been playing Portable Ops, Metal Gear, the first Metal Gear game for that system. So I should probably say, like, I'm a huge Metal Gear fan.
Metal Gear.
From, like, the first one I played was Metal Gear 2 for the PS2. And it's really crazy. I mean, like, everyone always says about Kojima Productions games, like, they're insanely convoluted, the plot lines. You never really under... I mean, I've literally read Wikipedia articles on each of these games and the fiction of Metal Gear. But, and I still don't understand, like...
Oh, like, Jesus Christ.
Like, how all the different... Like, there's some people who are, like, triple agents and, like... You know, there's different time frames for these things, and everyone has a name that is similar to someone else. Like,
yeah.
There's so many different snakes. There's, you know, at least one ocelot, you know, and Big Boss. Like, you're never really sure who's being referred to when you're talking about Big Boss. So it's pretty convoluted, but I like that. Like, it's very Japanese, like, the you know, the way the story is framed. The gameplay has never been the best aspect of those games for me, and I, you know, will probably receive hate mail.
Oh, please.
Hell, send any
mail. Please let us get hate mail. It means someone is listening. Oh, God.
I'm going to send us an email.
Oh, great.
It's going to say, why does Brian suck so much?
Yeah. We'll delete the spam filter. We'll pick that up because that's all we get.
No, I'll get you on your direct line for that.
on the Brian phone?
Yeah.
So you don't understand the story and the gameplay is not great. What is it that keeps you coming back to Metal Gear games?
I don't know.
Okay.
Like, there's something about the way the stories are told, which is...
Incomprehensibly?
Yeah, maybe that's what it... I don't know. Like, the second game... Like, I'm being a little bit, you know, harsh and tongue-in-cheek, so, like, the...
But everybody is. Everyone I've ever heard talk about a Metal Gear game is like, well, yeah, the story is incomprehensible, and the gameplay is really not that great, and... They all say the same shit, and I'm like, why would I play these games?
Well, I mean, like, so putting it into perspective, the stealth genre is not a big genre of games. You know, you've got the Metal Gear games, you've got the Thief games, you've got, what is that game? Splinter Cell series.
Hitman,
some other games, you know, like heavy hitters, but it's like you can count them on maybe one or two hands. Some games like Deus Ex, I think, are trying to increase that. You know,
have a stealth element.
You know, you could make an argument that Oblivion and the Elder Scrolls series always have some sort of stealth function that you can, you know, take advantage of. But in its time, I think, like, Metal Gear Solid 1 and 2 really did a lot of innovation in the stealth genre. I mean, really sort of set a lot of the pacing of the series and... I really feel that you can't beat the flavor of a Metal Gear Solid game. Like, they're very distinct. The storylines are always convoluted, but there's a common thread in terms of the themes that they represent. Like, I heard someone, I read somewhere that someone was explaining the Final Fantasy games and how they're not connected in terms of a story, but thematically they're always connected. You know, the same themes are represented in every Final Fantasy game, or most of them.
Fucking Japanese games.
Some of them, I mean, Final Fantasy is also an impenetrable sort of franchise in terms of its history, you know. Again, there's something about Final Fantasy games that I haven't finished, but I've played, and I intend to keep playing Final Fantasy 13. I just like them. I don't know.
Is that the one with the 40-hour tutorial?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm about 20 hours in.
Great. So you're still on baby steps.
The world has not opened up yet.
Aye.
So I don't know, but I'm also a fan of Japanese games, so yeah. Maybe that's something I have to do with that. But I was saying, I'm being a little bit too harsh on them. Like, the gameplay in those games is actually pretty good. Like, they're quirky in some respects. If you go back to when Metal Gear Solid 2 came out, I think that it was actually good for its time. Now it's a little bit kind of clunky. Like,
yeah, just like Resident Evil 4 came out, and people were like, oh my god, this is amazing. But you look back on it now, and people are like, yeah, compared to today, it's maybe not, you know.
Exactly, but for what it was doing at that time, it was a good game, you know. I went back and played Metal Gear Solid 1, for example, and the voice acting and the sort of story arc, I think, were the most interesting parts for me, but otherwise I didn't like that game as much. My favorite entry in the series so far is the third one, Snake Eater. I think that was a very well done game. Still a little clunky in spots, but the gameplay was actually pretty fun.
Yeah.
So I've been playing them in order of release, not necessarily in order of chronology of the games. So I really want to. I've got a PS3. I wanted to play. I wanted to get Metal Gear Solid 4, and I still haven't picked up because I haven't finished Portable Ops. So I want to finish Portable Ops, pick MGS4 up, and then.
Apparently, in Metal Gear Solid 4. There's a section where you climb a ladder up into the enemy base, and it takes 5 minutes.
For the climbing, or yes. Because of a cutscene?
For the climbing.
Yeah. I believe it. I mean, people say all kinds of stuff about that. Like, there's like hours of cutscenes in that game.
Yeah, right? Well, that's the thing.
So, the thing, I don't know, but I'm cool with that. Like, it's a Metal Gear game, you know, and I hear that Peace Walker, for some reason, they've like, I wouldn't say solved all of the Metal Gear issues, but like, it's understandable. Like, the story makes sense, and like, it, everything works well.
Kojima's off that series now, right? Or is Metal Gear Solid 4? Is 4 Peace Walker?
No.
Okay.
Peace Walker is the second PSP game.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, Kojima's done with the series, right? So,
sort of.
Or at least the Solid Snake.
Yeah, I mean, the Solid Snake story arc is.
Where he turns out to be his own father and his mother.
Exactly. And, yeah. You know, the thing about those games is that everyone has already spoiled, like, most of MGS4, like, for everyone else. So, but fortunately not Peace Walker, so I'm not sure, like, what happens in that game just yet. So I'm looking forward to playing that, too.
Cool.
But yeah, now they've moved on to Metal Gear Solid Rising, which they haven't talked about at all.
Yeah, that game's not coming out.
You don't think? I think it'll come out. I just think it'll be a while.
When it comes out, it will bear no resemblance to what was demonstrated.
Most likely, yeah.
That was a rush demo for Move. And
completely.
Cool idea, but they clearly couldn't get it to work.
Yeah.
Much like the vitality sensor for the Wii.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Yeah, so, and then I played a couple of demos, PSP demos. I played the original God of War demo.
The trilogy or the original God of War?
No, for the PSP. It's
Chains
not,
of Olympus?
Chains of Olympus, not Ghost of Sparta. I played that. It's a God of War game. And the Half-Minute Hero demos. Since that just came...
Did Super Mega Neo Climax come out on PlayStation as well? Or
I don't know. I assume so. I know it came out on Xbox.
Because I know the original Half-Minute Hero was only available on PlayStation.
It's on PSP.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know if it came out on the PSN, but I played the PSP demo in any case.
All right.
And speaking of demos, I also played through the Duke Nukem Forever demo again.
I saw you did that. I don't know why.
But I don't know. I wanted to delete it.
You should have.
I should have, but it's terrible. And it's just bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a lot of fun throwing the poop around right at the beginning. And the rest of it was terrible.
Yeah, so like I loaded it up and I was like, yep, Brian did that. Don't need to do that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it is a one-time joke. Granted, you can do it for like 5 minutes and have fun, or I can. But
well, I'm glad you had fun with that.
So did you delete it after that, or are you going to go home and play it again?
I deleted it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not like an abusive husband.
No, screw that. That game is bad.
Yeah, it really is. Sold better than everything else except for
L.A. Noire.
Was it L.A. Noire?
I think L.A. Noire.
Something beat it, but only by, it was like number one and number two.
It wasn't Shadows of the Damned.
It wasn't Shadows of the Damned. Shadows of the Damned sold 36,000 copies.
Yeah. Then I played Crysis 2.
Oh, yes.
I've been playing that. I really like that game. Did you play the original?
I did.
I didn't play it, so I don't really... I mean, I know everything about it, except for having played it, so... Did you like it?
I came to Crysis after playing the original Far Cry, and was not really a huge fan of where the Far Cry story went. I really liked the idea of Far Cry, but it went all sci-fi and stupid in the second half of Far Cry. And Crysis kind of started with sci-fi and stupid, and so while I liked the open world nature of it, it's much more linear than Far Cry was, at least ostensibly. Mm-hmm. So I played the beginning of it and got to where the sci-fi element started and went, all right, this is not really for me.
I mean, is it more the first one? Is it more like eye candy than anything, or is it good gameplay?
There's good gameplay there. All the core elements that they have in Crysis 2, as near as I can tell, are there in the original Crysis. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Just didn't appeal to me. Mm. Suit modes never really did it for me. Mm. The enemy AI was not intelligent enough to make it much of a challenge.
Well, that would be my only sort of complaint with Crysis 2 is the AI is not very good. Like, tactically, it can be okay, like if people are trying to smoke you out or whatever. They'll group up or move in certain patterns or, spray with their guns so that they try and hit you, so you have to come out of your cloaking mode, and that can be pretty good. But I mean, there's for every time that the AI does something smart, then one of the guys will just be running around in a circle or just like crouching and then standing up and then crouching and then standing up, which is pretty silly. But the game looks great. I'm playing it on 360. The game looks great for a 360 game. It's probably one of the best out there. I can't imagine what it looks like on a high-end PC.
How crazy is it that we're like, for a 360 game, it looks pretty good.
It's like, I know.
Oh, Jesus.
It's like, we've really...
Must be late in the console generation.
Yeah. it looks really good. I'm surprisingly hooked on it. I mean, like... I've talked about it before. Like, it really takes a certain kind of shooter to get me interested.
Yeah, you're not much of a shooter guy, so.
No, I mean, like, I'll play him just fine.
Yeah.
But if it has a hook like Borderlands or Bulletstorm to some extent, I haven't really gotten into Call of Duty or anything like that. But Crysis, I don't know. The setting is really, kind of interesting. There's a little bit of sci-fi to it. I love the suit. Like, I love going into cloak mode. Switching it off, taking somebody out, switching it back on, it's just really very cool to me. It seems the two things that it kind of brought up, which are kind of interesting, is that I started playing it right after the Duke Nukem demo, and I was like, and for whatever reason, Crysis 2, there's a lot of stuff to interact with as well, and I'm like, this was stupid in Duke Forever, like, and it was a gimmick, and I'm like, I'm having trouble, like, seeing this through a different lens. It's like the same thing for me. And the second thing it made me think of was what looks to be what they're trying to do with Deus Ex Human Revolution is in giving you alternate paths to do something, although you know, way not as fleshed out as that. I mean, at most, you'll enter an area and it'll give you a couple of tactical options that you can, you know, switch on your visor and just...
And it calls those out for you, right?
It does.
Yeah,
so it's very deliberate about that, and they're very minor things. Like, you know, in one section, I took a bunch of guys out, and I was like, okay, now I'm going to go do this stealth thing. And I go do it, and I basically just run under all the people that I just took out to the other side of the courtyard. And I was like, okay, great. But it's nice that at least, you know, you don't have to feel like you have to take on everybody if you don't want. Or if you just want to be beastly about it, you can, you know. So I'm really liking it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people really like that.
Yeah, I think it's a good game. So, that's what I've been playing.
All right. Well, good on you. Glad you played some things, because God knows I haven't.
Get on it.
Yeah. I watched part of the Giant Bomb Thursday Night Throwdown where they played Team Fortress 2, and I was like, want to play Team Fortress 2.
Didn't you play a lot of that at some point?
No, not really. I mean, I played some of it, but certainly not to the depths that I played, like, COD Blops or, you know, or Battlefield. But it's free to play. There's no reason not to play it, and there's loot and gear, and it sounds awesome. There are also a lot of very good players who will annihilate you for, you know, pennies on the dollar, but that's part and parcel.
Yeah.
What the hell were we going to talk about? I told you, listeners, that we were going to talk about not much, and my brain apparently is...
Well, you are a man of your word.
I am totally... let it not be said that I do not mean what I say.
Before we do that, we should mention that EA bought PopCap this week.
That's pretty much the only gaming news this week.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it had been rumored for a couple of months. you know, it's a deal for $750 million, which can go up to $1.3 billion with incentives. So,
yep.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with that. I mean, it's a not unsurprising move from EA, who is kind of feeling like they need to compete somehow with Zynga. And so they did it to make it their shareholders happy. We'll see if it yields any fruit.
Yeah. Well, you couldn't ask for a better buy.
It doesn't seem so. Yeah, in that space, you know, PopCap is very, very successful. So, and they didn't, PopCap did not, to their credit, did not rush into the Facebook games market or anything like that, which probably lots of people were wishing they were, saying, oh, you know, you guys have these pre-existing brands, you could totally just go into Facebook and mop up Zynga, but they didn't have a good plan for it, and so they didn't, you know, do it half-assed, so should be good. Do you actually remember what the hell we were
talking
about?
Yes, we're talking about, okay, so
thank
this...
Thank God, because I've no fucking clue what's going on.
So this week, IGN hired their new editor-in-chief, Stephen Lynch.
No, it's not Stephen Lynch. That would be hilarious, though.
I wish they did.
The singing comedian Stephen Lynch. That would be awesome.
What is he doing these days?
I think he just came out with a new album.
Is he still touring and stuff?
Yeah.
I don't ever see him come around.
Yeah, he's super funny.
Have you seen him live?
Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah, he's good. He's really good. As part of that, Hillary Goldstein,
his real name?
I don't know, something S. Lynch. His last name is Lynch, it's a Scott or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, so Lynch was right.
Lynch was right, yeah.
Okay.
He's coming from the East Coast. He worked for Reverb, which is a video game PR company, basically. Where he's been working there for 4 years. Before that, he did a lot of editorial and you know, games, quote unquote, journalism. Before that, so he has a lot of contacts, knows a lot of people, seems to be very well liked. But in his editor's note, you know, his first editor's note, talking about the announcement and how he was coming over, he talked about how games journalism, quote unquote, journalism. And I'm going to stop saying that at some point, but every time I say games journalism, you should presume there are quotes around the journalism part. He talks about
how... Was it then when you said it?
What?
Did you say it now? I'm confused. Are there quotes or not?
There are always quotes. Everything I say is quotable.
Bartlett's can't fucking keep up with me. How games journalism has been stayed for the last 15, 20 years. As he says in his introductory paragraph, says, you read a game preview today, and then read one from 5 years ago, and read one from 5 years before that, and they're all the same. There hasn't been any innovation, any change in how people cover video games, and that has really led to the market being stale. And he's coming in, you know, hopefully to change that, and IGN is making moves to change that. Now, IGN is the, I think, by far the leader in terms of online content, at least in volume and number of hits. I think they're the number one destination for the dude bros and for people who are casually interested in video games. And so for them to have adopted this, I think, is emblematic of the changes that we've seen parts of over the last 2 or 3 years.
They also have a different approach, I think, than a lot of the news aggregate sites. I think that they try and do more than just drive traffic.
So. Say what you will about IGN, and I've said a lot. At least they're not Kotaku, we'll always have that. But yeah, that's true. And with IGN's acquiring 1UP, and more importantly, the staff of 1UP, and 1UP has been trying to build its brand by creating a voice. And I think IGN has recognized that they need to start fostering and creating voices for their readers to respond to. They have some already. I mean, Greg Miller, like love him or hate him, is a voice. He's an outsized personality that people can really respond to and relate to. And in a world of you know, branded coverage, you know, and people creating, you know, creating a network of people who listen to them on a certain subject, it is important for you to create to have that.
Definitely.
You know, we see it. I've been following the Giant Bomb guys for years. I love the slant that they bring to video games coverage. They have a very wry sense of humor, and I really click with that. Whereas the IGN style of coverage for years, I just never was into. And now maybe that will change. They've brought on some people like Arthur Geese and Anthony Gallegos, who have voices that I am simpatico with, and so I'm more willing. I mean, you could not have gotten me 3 years ago to go listen to an IGN podcast. But once Arthur was there and Anthony was associated with those guys and Ryan Scott and those guys, I'm willing to give a chance because those guys have a voice that I like. We'll see where that goes. But it does seem to be reflective of a shift in the way that sites are covering games. I don't know what has fostered that change other than just a need for people to feel like they're making a difference mm-hmm. in the coverage.
I think you're right. I mean, for IGN, I mean, like, I've been following them since, like, the N64 days, like, for a long time. So I've seen them go through a lot of different iterations of their site, adding things like My IGN, like trying to, you know, do the social networking piece and get people more involved. They have a very good video team. I think that they're, what you're saying about them trying to develop more of more voices for their as part of their team and also create a different avenue of gaming journalism in quotes, I think is a really good is a good move on their part to distinguish themselves even further from, you know, being the I wouldn't call them the 800-pound gorilla because I'm not sure that that gaming press works exactly in the same way, but they're definitely a force to contend with. But at the same time, they are this huge organization. I mean, they are owned by Fox. They presumably have certain viewage needs that they have to meet.
Yeah.
They have a ton of people working for them. They are, you know, a larger organization. Not as agile as someone like Giant Bomb, who it's like, I know it's just, you know, in terms of the core team, it's like four guys, now five guys, and they have their, you know, tested team, screen.com teams and stuff, and a lot of people who work on the back end. But the thing that I think really for people who follow gaming press very closely, I think it is those personalities that really drive traffic and forge like larger relationships, especially with the pseudo like celebrity fandom that a lot of video game editors and journalists have. And But the content is also important. Like, Giant Bomb, for, like you said, whether you like people like them or not, I tend to really, I don't know, I guess I've known a lot of the people, not known personally, but like have followed the writing of people on IGN for a really long time, and also the Giant Bomb guys from when they're all over at GameSpot. Like, right. I just seem to, you know, jive with their personalities and their look on video games just pretty well. So it kind of attracts me to the their style of writing and you know, their podcasts and stuff. But the thing that Giant Bomb is doing that I feel like no one else is doing is the quantity and quality of their video that I don't think any other site has really caught up with them. And that's also a really important point. I don't know how much that drives their traffic other than people just liking the Giant Bomb guys and like buying Wizard t-shirts. Like, I don't really know. But,
which drives Chris Remo crazy, but that's a whole different
thing. But, I mean, whatever.
It is. I mean, I think it's clear that the video traffic is an attractor for them because they've found ways to do more of it. You know, it's not like they've been cutting back on it. So, which is great. I mean, I love their video content. It's well produced. You know, Vinny and Drew at Whiskey Media have now got all the tools that they could possibly need, and they get to play with it and figure out how to use it on the job. I can't think of a better possible situation for them to do that. But yeah, I mean, I think it really lends, you know, those quick looks and the various things that they do in terms of video, but also the Thursday Night Throwdown, their multiplayer thing on Thursdays, as well as the happy hour that they do on Fridays, really gives them a chance to kind of have fun with the audience. And I don't know if I told you, but they're doing another Whiskey Media open house in September, which we're totally going to. At least I'm going.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I'm with you.
Because it should be super cool.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of fan interaction that I feel like is possible for a group like Whiskey Media and IGN. I don't know. Like you said, they're not necessarily agile that way. Hopefully, with this new editor-in-chief and with the right philosophy, they're going to be able to do that.
Well, they do. I mean, to my knowledge, they do have a lot of those events. You know, and to be fair, like, IGN does have a good video team, too. Fran Mirabella, who leads that team, I think that he does a great job. And they have a lot of different kinds of content that they produce through the video thing. But no other site out there does the quantity that actually, I was listening to the Bombcast, I think last week or the week before, Jeff Gerstmann was talking about, you know, the issues that they run into talking to developers about how, they want to show 45 minutes of people's games, and they're like, wait, what?
Yeah, it's like, no, I don't want to show 5 minutes. I want to show them 45 minutes of their game. Yeah,
and that's a new model. You know what I mean? The only thing that I've really seen compared to it was at GameSpot. I think it was Greg Kasavin. He used to do these like 24-hour Oblivion marathons or something like that.
Awesome.
You know, I remember checking that out, just watching the Mountain Dews build.
Right, yeah.
I think IGN does those, you know, like meet and greets and stuff like that, and they've started this touring program of the offices for people who want to check them out and stuff. And I think that's a great new way of connecting with readers and hopefully increasing readership. But content related, I think, you know, it's people like, we were talking earlier, they just added Patrick Klepek a couple months ago to the Giant Bomb
guys, yeah.
And he is doing the closest that one can say to video game actual journalism, like not in quotes this time.
Yeah, he puts the Klepek in journalism. he's been a great. I mean, he added an aspect to Giant Bomb that I didn't even know I was missing. You know, I like blogs like Gama Sutra, which cover the business side of the more serious side of the video game industry. But you know, it wasn't compelling reading. But Patrick writes really, really excellent, you know, pieces about important things that are going on, and he's really added a lot to the Giant Bomb team. Where the rest of the guys, that's just not their strength,
yeah.
And more importantly, not what they want to do. You know, Giant Bomb was founded on the idea that, hey, guess what? We're going to do what the fuck we want to do, not what is expected from a place like Kotaku or something like that, where they must write a story on everything. You know?
And it's great. I mean, I think it's doing really well for them.
Yeah,
I mean, it's an excellent model. I mean, and to be fair, places like Kotaku, I go to them once in a while because I follow them on Twitter, and they do have some really well written stories. I mean, I think that they get a bad rap for just trying to drive content, and I think that's probably part of their part of their shtick. But they do have some good writers. They do have some good articles that go up. I mean, I followed a bunch of other sort of more poppy sites that have just for news or whatever. But then there's other sites that I follow, particularly in the MMO genre, that are heavily editorialized. And I read it because they're heavily editorialized. You know, I think that they're it's interesting to read to get different perspectives on the news rather than, you know, just getting a news feed.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that... I'm not sure that really answers the question of why does S. Lynch think that video game journalism, as it were, is stale, and what can be done to improve it? I mean, what are some things that maybe we think that it could benefit from, any of these companies?
Well, I think the fact is that, you know, writing preview, I mean, the model for video games coverage is broken, it has been broken because, you know, you have, because of the necessarily close relationship between the reporter and the company. You know, you can't do a preview of a game without having seen the game, and the company has to let you see the game
and talk about it.
Mm-hmm. And more publishers are holding back games from specific coverage because they don't like what that person has written about them before or whatever, things like that. There's no transparency or openness to that system. So, you know, you do something like what the Giant Bomb guys do, which is they don't do previews. You know, if they get a build of a game in the office that they like, then they'll do a quick look of it. They'll show you the game. You get to see it. You don't have to read somebody's impressions of it and then try and decide whether you're going to get hyped up for it. You watch the game, and if you're excited about it, great. And they do that for very select few games. And whenever a game comes out that seems to merit it, they do a quick look of it. They buy their own copies. They don't ask for the publishers to send them these things. They appreciate the publishers, and they have good relationships with most of them, but they're there to cover the games, and they're there to tell people whether they should buy them and give them a reason to buy them, and showing people what it looks like in action and what it's like and talking about it. You know, they'll do reviews as well, but that's really for the real tentpole releases. I don't think that's going to be the final straw. They're relying, you know, they're still doing quick looks of those games and maybe more in-depth stuff just to let you know what the game is. You know, sure. It's significant.
I do think that the Giant Bomb guys are pretty singular in their sort of cred to be able to do that, though.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
I'm not sure, like, how many people would be able to start their own company and,
no.
You know.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And that, pull and it what, off. You know, what I imagine we'll see from IGN is, you know, if S. Lynch, what I've, terrible, we probably, in the time that, man, the amount of time that we have been spent talking about it, we could have found out what his name
was. I'm going to look
it up. I imagine that given what he wrote for his opening editor's note, he's coming in to basically say to the guys who are left at IGN, what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? How are we going to put IGN's imprint on this coverage? You know, either they can't compete or they don't want to compete with someplace like Kotaku, which is, you know, all about putting up 100 news stories a day. So they need, you know, to differentiate themselves some way. You know, 1UP is a good acquisition for them in that sense, because 1UP did all kinds of crazy ass shit. I mean, they did a lot of crazy video stuff where it's like, hey, you know, Tina Sanchez, who's their community person, is a huge Modern Warfare person. So they're like, watch us film Tina as she watches the Modern Warfare 3 reveal trailer.
So great.
You know, watch Tina play Dance Central, you know,
so
and
great.
Other things like that. And you're just personalizing the staff and the people so that you feel like you're getting recommendations from friends and people you know is just, because buying a game and, you know, not necessarily, even for us, although we tend to buy a lot of stuff just because we're interested in it, but for more casual people who buy a game every 6 months, it's a big decision for them, particularly if they don't have a job or are younger. So it's important for them to form these relationships, and that's one way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the other thing, you know, IGN doesn't do a good job of publicizing its video content. You know, I follow a crapload of IGN people on Twitter now, and I almost never see somebody. Even Fran doesn't post stuff that it's like, hey, you know, watch this video. You know, I stopped following the IGN feed because there's almost no interesting content on that. And the meet and greets, as near as I can tell, seem to be strictly set up by people like Greg Miller because they like their fans.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like IGN is like, yeah, you know, every once in a while they'll do a thing where it's like, hey, come to PAX and we're going to have an IGN meet and greet. But IGN isn't like, hey, you know, meet us all at Potsy's Pizza and, you know, we'll do this. It's Greg Miller doing that. And that's great. That's one of the great value adds that he brings to the table, and that he's got people who are willing to do that. But they need to do a better job of kind of coordinating that stuff. And I imagine we'll start to see that as, you know, whatever his name is, you know, takes the reins and figures out what he's going to, what he can do and what he's going to be allowed to do.
I think, I mean, this is a great point. I mean, for my money and my time, I definitely gravitate towards the sites that I feel that there are personalities that I know and that I've, you know, become comfortable with and I understand, you know, either I may have met them or I haven't met them. In either case, I feel that I've read enough of their stuff to kind of get an idea of where they're coming from. So I can not only, if I'm going there for different reasons, I have some way to gauge how I feel about what they're saying about a game. So if it's an opinion article or an editorial, I'm kind of like, well, this is an interesting perspective and I understand why they're saying this and where they're coming from and how I feel about it in regards to that. Or if it's a game, I'm saying, well, okay, I've read stuff about them before. I know that, you know, this person is really into Batman or something, so that's going to affect their choices in this way or that way or what have you, and see how they reason their argument. And that's what I enjoy about, you know, and why I keep going back to places like Giant Bomb or the MMO sites that I follow or IGN or any of these sites. At the same time, I'm not sure how effective that is for people who either maybe repeat visitors but don't come to the sites for that reason, or just, you know, regular internet daily traffic, you know, people who are looking for a review about something. I don't have anything against previews. I think they're great. I think that there's definitely an oversaturation of content that comes out pre-game release now. Like, how long have we been seeing stuff about The Old Republic, for example? I mean, every week they're trying to keep people involved and, you know, post new content about their game, which is great, but it's like, at some point, one starts to lose interest and be like, all right, just let me know when this game comes out and I'll check it out then, because like the sort of trickling out of details is not enough.
And you follow way more MMO stuff than I do. I mean, I don't hear that much about Old Republic at all, and I'm still disinterested in it. So clearly they lost me a long time ago.
That's true, yeah. I mean, well, if you're looking for it, it's there. I mean, but I think...
I'm not.
Yeah, exactly. But if you're like someplace like ArenaNet, like I think they release a blog post every month, twice a month about Guild Wars 2, and I always read that stuff because it's interesting, you know, and I'm interested in their series. But, you know, not to sort of like downplay the importance of the Old Republic, I'm just saying that a lot of these games are way oversaturated in their pre-launch content. Yeah. And,
it's a classic PR model of like, you know, we have to make sure our voice is heard among all of the noise, and the way to do that is repetition.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, thinking about it, that that's true anymore. The Economist ran an article this last week or 2 weeks ago about the end of news and the return to the coffee house.
Yeah.
Because it used to be that, you know, you'd go to the coffee house to get news and you'd hear it from people who you knew and trusted and sort of, you know, you had no reason, either you understood their biases, like you said, or, you know, you had no reason to mistrust their news. And that may very well be the perfect model for what's happening to video game journalism, where it's, you know, again, quote unquote journalism. Where it's no longer the unbiased reporting isn't necessarily helping anybody anymore, particularly with publisher restricted access and things like that. So hey, you know us, we're going to talk to you like we want to talk to you about these games, and if you like it, great. You know, if you don't, well, then, you know, find somebody else who has a voice that you like.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I honestly don't have a conception of what kind of a thing draws Uber hits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't think of somebody who's reading the Yahoo News Wire or some other generic news aggregation thing, and they see an article about Call of Duty Modern Warfare, and they click on it, and it links them to IGN.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of an example of a case where because I read the Yahoo News Wire, and I'm trying to think of examples of stories that I clicked on that led me someplace else, and I can't think of anything, but that may just be me. So anyway, it's interesting. I mean, obviously you want to draw eyeballs because that's how they make their money. But you know, I don't know where the growth potential for that for that industry is. I fear that, and this may be a little silly, but I fear that, you know, we've reached the point now where, hey, the video game generation has grown up, and they've reached saturation. You know, everyone younger now knows about video games, and everyone older mostly knows about video games. So it's not like you're going to see the growth that you've seen the last few years as the video game generation got older. Now they're all the same, you know, it's all the same age, and they're consumers, and so it may be that we're starting to see the consolidation where it's like, okay, the market's not going to support.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know, but I think there's a happy medium or a balance to be found there, too.
Always is, yeah.
There's a, like, the example I'm thinking of is the BioShock E3 demo that was just released on
Game Trailers.
Yeah, Game Trailers. And a bunch of different sites linked to it or had it, you know, had feeds of it or whatever, and I think that's great. You know, it definitely showed off how great the game is. Ken Levine came out and, you know, did a bunch of interviews about why it's awesome and why people should like it, how it's different from BioShock and all these different things. And I think that was a really great PR push for that game. And it was handled differently by different websites because they had different interviews. And that's, I think, what I would like to see. I would like to see really solid releases of information about games, you know, pre-launch and post-launch, whatever, that are not sort of repetitive in nature and also not sort of a trickle, just like, you know, small like bits and pieces every week. I'd like to see really substantial previews of games and what's going into them, how are they working with them, what's it going to do for the genre, why should we be excited about those games? And having, you know, if I'm going to a particular website, I'm going there because it's definitely content because I want to see that video, but I'm also interested to see what they have to say about that game. So if they can make that compelling, either by their personalities or the way they present it or maybe the length of their presentation or what have you, or choice of how to present it, I think that could be a sustainable model. Even better than...
Yeah, but that model requires even closer cooperation and help from the publishers. And that's, you know, again, you know, if you... It would mean a lack of... I mean, Jeff Keighley from Game Trailers and from G4 has got... It's been doing this for years. He knows everybody. And he was able to get, you know, he has the clout to get that.
Oh, totally.
You know, there's nobody else who could offer that kind of access, and for a big chunk like that. And also that BioShock trailer, you know, they spent 6 weeks beforehand dribbling out bits of it.
Yeah.
You know, and people thought that was kind of weird, and you know, it's kind of like but it seems to have worked.
Yeah.
And that game is still a long way away.
Yeah, that's true.
The
game does look awesome, though.
It does look awesome, and you know, I have faith. But at the same time, the original BioShock sold well, but it didn't sell Call of Duty numbers.
Yeah,
you know, I don't think it sold. I think it sold a million something copies. I don't think it sold
really.
Yeah, I don't think it sold 4.
A lot. Yeah.
So anyway, I mean, Ken Levine on the Games with Jobs conference call a couple weeks ago was talking about the focus groups that they did, and they went into like college frats and said, "Hey, you know, do you like BioShock?" And the guy said, "What's BioShock? What's a Big Daddy?" No idea. As soon as they saw a trailer for it, they were like, "Oh, that looks pretty cool. I'd like to check that out." But they have no brand identity whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's one of the things they are trying to confront with the way they're handling this PR campaign.
Yeah.
It's a real time of change, both in video game PR and publishing, as well as coverage,
mm-hmm.
in terms of what they're going to be able to do and what the correct model is going to be. And for journalism, you know, quote-unquote journalism, as a whole, as well, as we're seeing.
Of course, yeah. Awesome.
All right, cool. Any read email this week?
Yeah, not so much.
Shit.
One email that says, "Why does Brian suck?"
Yeah, but that email comes every week.
Yeah, that's true.
Thanks, Mom. Well, if somebody wanted to send us email, where would they send it?
They would send it to strgamerpodcast@gmail.com or comment on the blog.
Or comment on the blog at strgamer.blogspot.com.
Or they can tweet how much you suck directly.
Definitely tweet at us. Because ideally your question should be less than 140 characters anyway. But we're not picky right now. You could send us an essay and we'd probably read it.
Actually, yes. Send us an essay on game journalism.
Yeah, right. So many bad theses headed our way now. So you can hit me up on Twitter at BrianWP.
And you can tweet at me at Sominator.
Excellent.
Find us on iTunes. Rate us.
Yes, definitely rate us. And that'll be just about it.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
See you next time.